Before I learned how to order my beer, I learned how what does a Vollmacht means or like any other bureaucratic words.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Apfelbox, the official podcast from Apfelbund. I am Olli, your host. Und nicht wundern, diese Folge wird auf Englisch sein, denn mein Gast heute ist Bahadir. Er wohnt zwar in Berlin, aber er kommt ursprünglich aus der Türkei und spricht Englisch. Deswegen haben wir das Interview auch auf Englisch gemacht. An alle, die Englisch können oder ihr Englisch vielleicht ein bisschen verbessern wollen, hört euch die Folge sehr gerne an. Es ist auf jeden Fall eine spannende Geschichte, wie er seine Firma gegründet hat. Und ich wünsche euch allen viel Spaß. Okay, hi and welcome to Apfelbox. I'm very happy to have you as my guest. Why don't we start with a little introduction of yourself?
Great. Thank you very much for hosting me, Oli. Very nice to be here. My name is Bahadir. I'm a co-founder and CEO of Fabrikatör. I'm an entrepreneur. Fabrikatör is a software company helping Shopify brands. Right now, I'm in Berlin. That's where I've been living for the last 5 years. And this is one of the strangest summers that I'm having. looking in the past 5 years, it's been very cold, rainy. And today I think it's around like 16 degrees, not the best summer weather, but I'm pretty sure sunny days are ahead.
Yeah, the weather here is the same. It's raining and it's stormy, also just 16 degrees. So it's a weird summer, as you say, yeah.
I guess it was almost 2 months ago when we first met with you at Apfelbund summer party. And yeah, the weather was amazing as well, just like today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least at the summer party, it cleared up after a while. And I hope today we will see the sun at least for a few minutes. But I'm just hoping that our summer isn't over already for this year. Because if you think about that, we're actually in the middle of summer, it should be a different weather.
Well, totally. Actually, it just reminded me something. In my first workplace here in Berlin, we had a Slack group where people were messaging when the sun is out. So people were running to the windows or to the street just to get some sunlight during the winter.
Amazing. Yeah, that's very important to get some sunlight through the day. Okay, so you are the founder of Fabrikatör, right?
Right.
Okay, before we get to what Fabrikatör actually is, because I think not everyone has heard of it. I want to know what you did before you founded Fabrikatör. So what was your life before that? And maybe we can start with, where did you grow up?
Yeah, I'm actually born and raised in Istanbul. I lived there for 25 years. I studied at one of the most beautiful universities in Istanbul. View looking at the strait to the Bosphorus, amazing university campus, which used to be an American college before. And that's where I studied management information systems. I guess this is very similar to Informatikwirtschaft in Germany. That's where I met with my co-founder. During the university years, I worked in a lot of different jobs. I was always trying different opportunities just to figure out what I like doing after the school. So I tried software development. I worked on a project for 1 year. Then I moved on to another company as a marketing person. I even worked at a big consultancy company like Accenture. And this is like one of the experiences where I learned what I don't like doing. So I was slowly crossing things off my list and deciding what I don't want to do after the graduation. But towards the end, I actually found the things that I like. So I worked at a big telecom company called Turkcell as a data scientist. And I was working on prediction models about upsell, cross-sell, churn. I had a great mentor there who helped me to love this job. But then it was corporate. And as some young blood fresh out of college, you want to do something more active. You don't want to be in that cubicle office. So I left that very prestigious job and moved on to a company which was also a startup, and I was actually the first employee of that startup. And we were selling tour experiences in Istanbul to kind of like A-plus customers coming from Soho House, Ritz-Carlton. So being the first employee there, I learned doing everything by myself, setting up digital processes, automations, but sometimes also welcoming guests at the airport or giving tours when a tour guide is not available. So that gave me a very nice experience with the city that I love, because Istanbul is an amazing city that you can actually lose yourself in the streets and within this history of the city. It's just layer on top of each other and taking you on a full journey. That was my best year, I would say. And I actually curated some tours as well. So my favorite tour was bite and bike tour, where you are cycling but also stopping at different food stops and having a little bite, so you don't, because you shouldn't eat too much, you're gonna cycle, but it's enough to taste the flavors, and if you like it, the next day you can come back. But my tour was giving a very good overview of the city's most delicious spots. That was one of the best things I ever done. And then I've moved back to kind of like the corporate world again. I worked in between a telecom company and a bank, building a fintech venture in the middle. So I stayed there for 2.5 years. And then at some point, I decided to move to Berlin, because that's where all my friends were. Everyone was moving to Berlin for the cool tech jobs and the beautiful city. So yeah, I followed them. And it's been 5 years since I'm in Berlin now.
Awesome. A very awesome journey, I would say. It's a wild variety of things you've done before your job now. So you've been a tour guide, if I understood that correctly, for quite a while.
Yes, I've done that, yes. I met a lot of interesting people. I even met Hollywood actors. I once met Eddie Redmayne. it was great, awesome. Actually. Yeah.
Amazing. How old were you when you started with the tour guiding?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. So that was, I think I was 23, 24, probably.
Okay. Awesome. Wow. What would interest me is what is the school system like in Turkey? Because I only know the school system here in Germany, and I heard something about a school system in America. But what is it like in Turkey? Is it different?
I guess it's different, yeah. Ours is a little bit closer to American system. So one, at high school, you pick your specialization. So you can either pick science as your major studies, literature, and something called like the balanced program. It's kind of like 50-50 of both. That's what I picked. And at the end of the fourth year of the high school, you take a central exam, and that central exam has just like more than, I guess, 2 million students participating, and they're ranking you based on the score that you make. So the top students are going to the top colleges, and the rest is being distributed to whatever they can get in. You also need to fill out a list saying like which school you want to go, so, and which major you want to pick. So you make your list, and then the system is comparing you with others based on the ranking of your preferences and also your score. So you can only get into the school you want if you have the highest score among everyone else who's preferring that school. So that's a very competitive system. It's very stressful, because if you fail it once, you need to wait for the whole year, prepare again and take the exam. And there are people who tried it like 2-3 times just to make it to their dream university. But my journey was not very smooth. I started at a private college with a 100% scholarship. Although I really liked it, I always wanted to go to the university called Boğaziçi University, or maybe Bosphorus University, as our English-speaking friends may know. So I did 1 year in that private college. I got some scholarship. I went to US. I lived there for 1 year, studied at North Central College in Chicago. When I came back to Turkey, I decided that I need to find a way to make it to the college of my dreams, the university of my dreams. So I found a way that I can actually transfer from my school to the Boğaziçi University. So I took that opportunity. I participated in the interviews with the professors. I did some written exam. And in the end, I was one of the three people who were accepted that year for transferring students. And that's how I ended up in my school as I graduated to the school that I graduated.
Awesome journey. Really amazing. So you really like kept holding on to that dream of your dream college.
Well, that's what you gotta do. And I think entrepreneurship is also kind of requiring you to do that. If you have that grit holding on to what you really want in life, somehow the opportunities come in front of you and you just need to take them.
Okay, amazing. And when in all that journey did you start creating Fabricatura? When did that initial idea came up at the first place?
This mostly came from my co-founder, Demirhan, now our CTO. We studied together, and when we were studying, we always built projects just because it was fun. We were enjoying doing things together. And then one day he came and he said, look, I'm working at this company, which is doing online accounting software for the Mittelstand. And a group of our customers are not happy because we cannot do manufacturing management within that software. So, Bahadur, what do you say if we just build an add-on to the existing accounting software and help these customers to create manufacturing plants by planning raw materials? So that's how the first idea came in. We created a very simple app allowing customers to create bill of materials, recipes, and the raw material planning for their manufacturing connected to their accounting. And this actually brought us great success. In 2 years, we reached profitability in the Turkish market without getting any investment. It was fully bootstrapped. Along the way, we learned a lot about the manufacturing processes, what is the relationship between the manufacturer and the brand, their end consumer. And you may know of Turkey is a very big textile country, so they're producing a lot of textile goods for the fast fashion brands especially. So our manufacturing customers were this kind. And this opened us the world of fashion and apparel. We started to work with manufacturers who are also selling their products through online stores. So looking at two type of customers, one is only manufacturing and selling it to a brand, and the other one is manufacturing and selling themselves, they were differentiating somehow. Back in time, we didn't know that they were called direct-to-consumer brands, but more and more we dig deeper into their issues and needs. We understood that this very specific niche segment actually needs a special solution because they do not only plan raw materials, they actually try to balance their working capital between generating demand and providing the products to sell based on that demand. So it was a different kind of problem, which brought us to a point in the year 2020 where we make a pivot. We said, okay, we want to go for a bigger market. We were happy with what we were doing in Turkey, but we always wanted to build a global product. So let's take our experiences from that journey and build something global from scratch. So in the year 2020, right before Corona started, we made that decision. And we moved our company to Germany, and that's how we started from kind of scratch again.
Was it difficult starting when COVID started with that company? Oof. Was it difficult having that?
It was the worst. Actually, COVID also affected how our journey shaped up because initially we wanted to start our business in US. That's why I was in New York searching for investments, talking to potential customers and investors at that time. But COVID started. I didn't know how serious it was back then. And I was like, probably it's just some flu. I'll stay here and finish my meetings and I'll go back with my return ticket. But my friends were quite anxious about the situation because they were reading more than I did. And I said, we have to go. This is something different. This is something big. So we took one of the last flights from New York to Germany. And the moment I came back to Germany, it was already the quarantine time. So I wasn't able to go out. I didn't have my full-time job anymore because I quit it. I thought I was going to move. I was going to move to US. So I kind of landed in the middle of nothing. No people. Everyone is quarantined. My rental contract was canceled because I was about to move. And I didn't have a job. So that didn't leave me much choices other than starting the business in Germany. So I said, okay, I've been living in this city for the last 2 years. I like it. And I don't have any other choice. Let's do it here. So that's how I decided to establish the company here. But Corona made it difficult because my co-founder was still in Istanbul. And we had to sign some papers at the notary. To do that, I had to get his power of attorney. But he needs to go to the embassy, German embassy in Istanbul, which is closed. They don't accept any visitors because of Corona. So it delayed everything. It was a mess. We were just waiting and waiting, pushing through the meetings, deadlines, every day watching the news if the restrictions are going to be lighter. So I think it easily made us lose like 7-8 months in terms of productivity. But in the end, we managed to do it. So almost after a year, my co-founder also moved to Germany and we had our companies established here. We joined an accelerator program, which was supported by Axel Springer and Porsche. So that was the first step into the German startup scene for Fabricateur.
Awesome. I'm always kind of impressed, but more in a bad way, what COVID actually impacted just existing. It's always awesome how, and it's not awesome, but it's kind of impressive how one disease can change the whole world and so many people, so many choices, so many journeys. Have you ever thought about what would have happened if COVID didn't exist?
I don't know if it would be better or worse, so there's no way to know, but probably we would be in US and I'm not sure if we would have met with Apfelband and all the amazing people who are supporting us today. So whether or not it was going to be US or not, I'm very happy that we did this in Germany and we surrounded ourselves with amazing people. So maybe I might be even glad that this happened to us. So we ended up here in our journey.
That is an amazing perspective. It takes a lot to see it that way. Awesome. What would you say, besides COVID, was the biggest difficulty in starting your company?
Bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Especially as a foreigner, as a migrant, here in Germany, we're trying to do something different. We're building a business model that doesn't exist. And we had a lot of disadvantages doing this ourselves. I think if I had a German co-founder, my life would have been easier. I would just get help for going through the bureaucracy and I wouldn't need to figure them out myself. But in the end, again, it's a learning journey and we learned how we jump over the obstacles. So yeah, we learned how to deal with that. And now I think bureaucracy is the least of my concerns.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, Germany is kind of hard when it comes to bureaucracy. That's true. I've heard that a lot. Even for German founders, it's a lot of paperwork and just so much stuff that you have to consider.
Literally, actually, we had an office in Istanbul, and I don't think in our office we didn't even have one folder of documents. Everything was digital. But now I'm here in my living room. Just one of my cabinets is full of paper, company documents, my personal documents. It's crazy. The paper trail is crazy. But actually, maybe things are getting better. The other day, I went to Ausländerbehörde and to like get an invitation for my friend. like, of course, printed everything because they might have asked for it. So I gave my Anmeldung, and the lady was like, oh, no, I don't need Anmeldung. It's here on the screen. I was like, look at you, Germany. Like, you are making progress. Digital Anmeldung? Wow.
Yeah, and that in the year 2023. Awesome. Yeah, so have you tried learning German?
Yes, many times, actually. It's funny, but in high school, I think we all had German classes. So English and German are the most common languages taught at school in Turkey. English is the primary one, so you get 40 hours a week. 40 hours? No, not 40 hours. 8 hours a week, mostly, and then 2 hours of German most of the time. So I took German classes for 4 years, but I wouldn't say my teacher was the best. The teachers are mostly the ones who are like either guest arbeiter who moved back to Turkey. So they don't have a very formal education about teaching language. They just speak the language. So mostly German classes were not very helpful. But then when I moved to Germany, I took a couple of classes here. Every year I start a German class, and then I find myself at the same spot where I say like, hey, I don't have enough time. That's my excuse. That's why I cannot learn. But I know a lot of silly words in German. Like before I learned how to order my beer, I learned what does a Vollmacht means or like any other bureaucratic words, because that was my day-to-day life solving these puzzles. Yeah. But today I'm more comfortable with German, but still, unfortunately, not at a level to carry on a conversation on a podcast. Maybe next year I will surprise you.
Yeah, maybe next year we will try again and see. Yeah, but I heard from many people that are not from Germany that if you want to learn German, German is one of, I think, most difficult languages to learn, or maybe not the most difficult, but one of the most difficult because of the grammar.
Yes, but Turkish is difficult too. I mean, I think there's no easy language, especially if you're not coming from a country where the Latin languages are being spoken. So if my mother tongue was Spanish, French, Italian, probably it would have been easier for me to learn German. But vice versa, it would be also very difficult for you to learn Turkish because there's a lot of suffixes that's just being added to the end of the sentence, which looks like a train. I'm still amazed how foreigners learn Turkish. So, but yeah, I think it's all about dedicating time and practicing. And obviously, Berlin is not the best place to learn German because life around me is just happening in English. And yeah. That doesn't give me it's not pushing me, forcing me to speak German.
Yeah, well, but if you don't need it, it's good that English works, I guess.
Yes, but I still would love to learn. Now I started to listen to the radio at home in German, so I can at least understand the news, because I think it's important to speak the language of the country that you're living in.
Yeah, definitely. It helps a lot, of course. Okay. So let's see, Fabrikator. Can you explain what exactly Fabrikator is used for?
Mm-hmm. So in the simplest terms, it's for inventory and demand forecasting. We are helping direct-to-consumer brands to figure out how much stock they need in order to not to run out of stock. And Fabrikator is doing that based on looking at the lead time of the suppliers, of the logistics conditions, also the forecasting that we have built. So we're telling when you should order products, how many products you should order, and which products you should order, which is the first step of creating a purchase order. So we streamline that process because many direct-to-consumer founders out there starting their journey, they do it themselves, and it's a lot of manual work, pulling data from Shopify, crunching numbers on Excel, trying to figure out what will your next purchase order look like. It's taking time, and I believe this is a work that can be automated, and that's what we did. That's how we started. But more and more, we immerse ourselves into this space, we also understood there is more that we can do for the D2C founders. For example, creating different scenarios about marketing. Like if I'm going to double down on my Google Ads, what will my inventory look like in the 6 months? I need to figure out. So Fabricateur is going more into that direction, actually becoming the virtual head of operations for e-commerce brands. Because, you know, Apfelbaum started like that too. You mostly start with one or two person doing everything yourselves, bootstrapping. But then at some point your business outgrows your capacity, and that's where you need to hire people. And hiring supply chain talent is not that easy. There are millions of e-commerce companies out there, but very few supply chain talent. So the founders, D2C founders, are always looking for a way to bridge that gap, either by working with freelancers or employing a software which can make it easier for them. So we are combining it too. We are giving them a digital tool which acts like an employee. What I mean by that, if you imagine having a head of operations in your company, you would expect that person to raise the red flag when there's a risk, a revenue risk, operational risk. And you would also expect them to be opportunistic. If there's an opportunity about selling more, making more revenue, or cutting down the costs, you would expect that person to come to you with this kind of an idea. So Fabricateur is doing both, always telling you, where is the opportunity, where is the risk, where you should focus, and saving you time and increasing your revenue. So yeah, that's what we do.
So Fabricateur is a tool to forecast in some way, right?
True, yes. It's one of the things that we do.
What was the initial motivation to say we have to do something different?
The oldest solution for inventory planning has always been Excel sheets. That's where you start. And I always say that if you're building a B2B SaaS tool, your first competitor is Excel. That's where everyone goes first. But then there are also solutions from the past for inventory planning, which are complicated tools built for people who have some education, have some background about supply chain. And the software itself also requires some education. You need to learn how to use that tool. And I know that most D2C founders out there, they don't want to be a supply chain expert. They just want to run a successful brand with a good story, with a high quality of products and happy customers. So why would one try to educate themselves about using a software? So this is the part where we said we need to do something different. We need to make this complex problem and easy enough for everyone to be able to understand and operate without having a PhD in supply chain. So that was one of the first points. We wanted to differentiate by making it simple, easy to understand, and trustworthy.
When did people start noticing that Fabricateur is something different, a new helpful tool that didn't even exist until you started it?
Yeah, so if you ask people what is a virtual head of operations, they don't know. It's not a term that the market knows, so it's something that we are building. And we could not market ourselves by using that term. That's why we stick to the problems of the customers and marketed ourselves based on these keywords like out of stock, inventory forecasting, purchase orders, supplier management. And that's how we put ourselves in the market. And anyone who has a problem with these things, searching on Shopify App Store, searching on Google, maybe on forums, we put ourselves at the front of these searches. And that's how people met with Fabricateur. I think they don't understand the really differentiating part until they start their trial. Once they start their trial installing the app, they see how easy the interface is. And the first screen they see is always creating that wow effect. I was like, hey, this looks modern. It doesn't look like an ERP system that was built like 20 years ago. It is playful, colorful, easy to understand. And I actually enjoy using that product. I would come back to this software again because it's such a breeze for me. And I think the first impression is very important, even in B2B as well.
Yeah, definitely. So let's see if I cut away again. But in the beginning, when Fabricator started, have you had ever any thoughts of doubt that Fabricator would work, or were you always confident?
Well, of course, we doubted many times. It's not about the business idea itself. It's more about whether if we are going to raise enough capital, whether if we are the right cut for this business. Because to be honest, building a business has a lot of ups and downs, and it's a roller coaster, and it's not for a faint at heart. You need to, yeah, you need to learn how to handle these situations. But there has been some break points where we said, all right, let's not do it. We don't have to do it. Like, there are a lot of opportunities out there. Maybe this is not the one. So we came to the edge of quitting, actually. But then what pulled us back into this was the early adopters who were using the software. They're like, we've been using your software and it's really made our life easier. So we also have one feature idea. Can you also look into this? That was like the hook that brought us back, because the moment that you're thinking about quitting what you're doing, and then you realize you're actually creating an impact in other people's lives, and they're actually very much appreciating what you're doing, that's the hook that brings you back and motivates you about building something. Because I know the time that we save for the founders somewhere in the world, we are giving them the time that they can spend with their families or maybe with their teams to make it a better workplace. So the impact is amazing. And when I hear it back from people who are using the software, I always get goosebumps. And that's what brings us back to this job every single day.
I really like the way you just put that. That you don't just give them a great tool for the company, but also more time with their family. That is really amazing. That is an awesome impact, definitely. So how old is Fabricator this year?
Mm-hmm. So looking back, our story in Turkey, it's actually started in 2018. So since the initiation, it's been 5 years. But our journey in Germany started in 2020. So it's our German entity is 3 years old. And since we started everything from scratch, I think I can say 3 years for Fabricator.
So you could say that not only you grew up in Turkey and then moved to Germany, but also your company did.
Definitely, yes. That's a very nice way to put it, actually. So I was born and raised in Turkey. I moved to Germany, and I had a lot of personal and professional development here. And today, I define myself as a person with a two hearts, one with a Turkish heart, one with a German heart. And our company is kind of the similar, because it's also born in Turkey and moved to Germany. It's kind of like an immigrant startup following this journey. And now, yeah, it's growing in Germany with international investors, international customers, and generating value. So true. I think that like multicultural aspect is in our DNA and in our company's DNA.
That's very beautiful. I really like that. What is your vision for the future? Maybe the next few years.
Mm-hmm. So supply chain has always been a slow moving industry when it comes to innovation and digitalization, because it was very fragmented. There were a lot of things coming from the past, difficult to change, and the scale is too big to change things from a fundamental point of view. But Corona actually had one positive impact. We had a huge supply chain crisis during the Corona, and you know, we all had difficulties with the empty shelves, fighting for toilet paper 2 years ago. But that actually made supply chain more resilient, because we have seen how fragile it can be. And now the actors in the supply chain field started to invest more and more into digitalization, predictability, making it a more reliable industry. So it really helped the whole industry as a whole, from retail, for manufacturing and supply chain itself. And the change is still happening. So what I see in the future, that more and more we have digital data about logistics, inventory and payments, which is already there, there will be less need for manual work. And that's what Fabricateur comes in. I imagine Fabricateur being the virtual head of operations for any business that is managing physical inventory and accepting digital payments. If these two conditions are met, and then Fabricateur can actually do the job of an head of operations. It doesn't have to be e-commerce. It can be the Coca-Cola machine over there. It still needs to be refilled. You still need to figure out how many Coca-Cola light you need to put, how many Fanta needs to go there, which shelf position, how often. A person is doing that today. So why not Fabricateur do it with a simple API? Or maybe the kiosk downstairs should be done as well. So the world is evolving in a more digital way. The inventory remains physical. And Fabricateur will be there for any business who needs inventory forecasting and operations planning.
Very awesome. So we can all be excited to hear from Fabricateur more in the future. How many customers do you have at the moment?
We just marked 100, so it's all around the world. I would say like roughly 50-50 between Europe and US, North America actually, including Canada, and the rest is in beautiful Australia and New Zealand.
Awesome. So very, very exciting what will happen with Fabricateur in the future.
Yeah. My dream is to actually see Fabricateur's logo, or maybe we will put a face on it as well, in the organizational charts of the companies. Like, here's the CEO, hey, and here's the operations manager, Fabricateur. He doesn't have a face because it's a software, but it does the job.
Awesome. That would be very beautiful. What I would also like to know is, how did Apfelbund get into that journey? When did that start?
Interesting. Let me think. What's the exact date? I think it was 2021. Apfelbund installed Fabricateur app on their store, and they were quite ambitious about what our software can do. So they started to write us from the chat. Can you do this? Can you do that? We have an idea. But it was right before Black Friday, and there is a problem with the supply chain where the products were not going to be on time. So they were not going to be in stock when the Black Friday starts, but maybe they will be available in a day or two later. So Apfelbund did not want to stop sales at that time. And they asked, hey, you already know how many products are coming. Can you guys actually limit the maximum amount of products we sell based on the purchase orders, so they can actually recover revenue? I was like, this doesn't sound like a bad idea. Let's do it. And we actually did kind of a hackathon with my co-founder. We sit down, develop the solution without any user interface. We send it back to Nathaniel. And I was like, what do you think? Do you think this would work? Yeah, awesome. This will save us in the Black Friday. So that quick solution saved some good revenue for Apfelbund during the Black Friday. And that's how our relationship as a user, as our customers, started to evolve more into a solution partnership. Ideas were flowing. They were telling us what they need. We were developing these features, and that relationship brought us closer to a point where Nathaniel wanted to support Fabricateur by becoming an angel investor in our first round. So that's our relationship evolved so far. And Apfelbund is not the only one. We have a couple of other customers who found us online, used our solution as a customer, and then became investors in Fabricateur because they believed that we are solving a very big pain, and there are millions of other brands out there who needs that solution. So I'm grateful for everyone.
Awesome, I can imagine. So you could actually say that Apfelbund challenged Fabricateur actually in some way, right?
Definitely, yes, yes. Because the entrepreneurial mindset strikes again. So Nathaniel was not like, hey, okay, if our inventory is going to be late, and maybe we're not going to make this much of revenue this Black Friday. He didn't accept it, that option. He went far and beyond, and he asked if there would be a better solution for this, and he also pushed us to the limits that we didn't know of that exist before, and then we built a solution. So it was a win-win. I think the synergy between different founders, entrepreneurs is very important. So I try to open myself up to anyone out there working in e-commerce just to learn and ideate, because that's where the great ideas come from.
Amazing. It's really awesome to see how customer and company work together in all different kinds of way. Here in our company, it's also the same. We work together with our customer to make the company better. And in your situation, it's also the same. Your customers say, hey, we need this, we need that. And you think, okay, yeah, let's see if we can do that.
Sounds like we are a match.
Awesome. Great. Okay, I think we are coming to an end. It was very awesome. What I also would like to mention is you also have a podcast, right?
All right. Yes. So we are running another initiative under Fabricateur. It's called D2Cville. It's an online community for direct-to-consumer brands to share their experiences, also their tech stacks, what's the recipe for success. We are doing a podcast, but it's only one part. We also have a lot of content on socials, including TikTok, where we have short videos, and a long format of blog posts on our website, d2cville.com, D and then 2 with a number, cville.com. Yeah, you can visit, you can find more stories. We also have one interview with Nathaniel. So if you haven't already listened to him enough in this podcast, you can go back to d2cville and listen to him again.
Amazing. So yeah, for all of you that are listening, check out D2Cville. And I'm thanking you, Bahadir, that you have been my guest for this episode. It was really nice to get to know you, and your story with Fabricateur is really amazing.
Thank you very much, Oli. This is my pleasure. It was a very fun chat, and I wish you guys all the best.
All right, then see you around. Bye.
Bye bye.
Und damit sind wir auch schon fertig mit der Folge. Vielen Dank, dass du bis zum Ende dran geblieben bist und zugehört hast. Ich hoffe, man konnte alles ganz gut verstehen, auch wenn es zwischendurch manchmal schwierig war, die richtigen Worte zu finden. Doch ich denke, dass wir auch, obwohl es technische Schwierigkeiten gab zwischendurch, dass wir das ganz gut gemeistert haben. Es geht ja im Endeffekt um die Geschichte und ich denke, die kam auch ganz gut rüber. Schau bitte auch auf den Social Media Plattformen vorbei. Unter @apfelband findest du uns eigentlich überall. Oder auch auf dem neuesten Kanal @apfelboxclips. Da findest du auch von dem Podcast nochmal die Highlights als Shorts zusammengefasst. Ich danke dir, wünsche dir einen wunderschönen Tag und wir sehen uns in der nächsten Folge. Ciao!